This is the Cinema Tuesdays podcast. I'm Nathan Cohn. August Evening is opening in San Antonio this month, followed by dates in Los Angeles, Austin, and Portland. The film is about an aging undocumented immigrant living with his widowed daughter-in-law. Both of them are still adjusting to life without their spouses and struggling not only to get on with life, but to get by. Earlier this year, August Evening won the Cassavetes Award at the 2008 Spirit Awards. That's an award given to the best feature film with a budget under $50,000. Chris Esca from Gonzales, Texas, wrote and directed August Evening, and the film stars Pedro Castañeda from San Antonio. Castañeda was also nominated for a Spirit Award for his performance in the Best Actor category. Not bad for your first film out of the gate. Besides doing publicity for August Evening, Castañeda is part owner of a towing company and installs wireless networks in San Antonio. That's how he first met director Chris Esca.
Well, I met Chris at Urban 15. It's like a dance studio that George Cisneros runs. I was there fixing his computers, and Chris approached me and asked me if I could read some lines. I told him that I wasn't there for any auditions, and he goes, "No, I know, but I like your boots, and I like the way you look." And I kind of saw it as strange, so I said no. And he asked me to read the script. I said, "Okay, I'll read the script." I read the script. I liked it. Kind of related to my family and my parents. And I said, "Well, if you're willing to take a chance, I'll go ahead and try it."
Mm-hmm. And as a non-actor, what did you expect when you agreed to work on the film?
I certainly didn't expect this much. I was expecting something small. He showed me his previous work, Doki Doki. It was very good. I liked it. And I thought, well, if I could get, you know, a DVD of this, whatever it was at the time, I wasn't sure what it was, and have something to show my kid to say, look, even at my age, I can still do something new. You guys can do it too, you know. I just don't give up in life. That's what I was, you know, mainly, you know, going for at the time.
And what kind of direction did Chris Esca give you when you were on set? Was he more hands-on with you in working, or?
Well, most of us were non-actors. There was a couple, two or three that were actors already. So a lot of us had to be, you know, handheld all the way. You know, we didn't know any of the terms or, you know, how to position ourselves. So the crew, the cast, everybody was really, really helpful, really patient with us. And it took that to make this movie.
Your own parents were migrant workers, is that correct?
That's correct.
Do you see anything of your own parents in the character you were playing?
Very much. Even the housing, some of it brought back a lot of memories of when I was a child. I told Chris, you know, for us as kids, it was a game. It was fun. But looking back and remembering the hardship on my dad's face and my mom, it did bring sad moments to me.
What area of the Southwest were you living in at the time?
We moved around Colorado, Wyoming, a lot of Texas also, watermelon, things like that in that area. But when the hardest areas that we did were probably Colorado.
Do you have children yourself? How does your relationship with them compare to the kind of distance, I guess, that exists between Jaime and his children in the film?
Well, my children are pretty close to me. They're not like anything like in the movie. Although my dad passed away in 2006, I spent most of 1 year taking care of him before he passed away. And I asked my children, I said, "Do you guys think you'll be able to do something like this for me?" And they answer yes, but you know, it's kind of like a not a credible yes. But you know, they're a lot closer than what Jaime's children are.
And how did you approach the character yourself then in that case?
I took a lot from, tried to put myself in my father's shoes. You know, how he would have to get up early, go to work, and how I could see, you know, how tired he was. But he kept going, and I tried to do that. I tried to just be my father, basically.
How did your father, in the very hard life, of course, that he had to lead in order to make a successful life for you and your siblings, how did that affect the way things were for you growing up and at home, the family dynamic?
Well, life was hard for us. I mean, like I said again, we as children really didn't understand the problems. But, you know, we had cousins who were better off, and they had toys, and we didn't. They got to go on vacations, and we didn't. So, you know, we did feel the differences, but it didn't affect us that much. Well, my dad wasn't very much for words, especially with us. He didn't really. He talked mostly to my mom, and he had a plan. I mean, he had saved money. He was saving money. Instead of going on vacations or buying useless toys, like he used to say, he would save money. And eventually he started up a chain link company, you know, putting chain link fences. And then he got tired of that, and he started doing construction, which, you know, he was well off when he passed away. So he did well for himself. He was only 11th grade. He only made it to the 11th grade because of the work that he had to do, not because he didn't want to finish.
Do you feel that August Evening as a film serves kind of a dual purpose to not only tell these family stories, but also something of the immigrant experience in America?
Well, as a matter of fact, I don't think it was ever an immigration movie, but it, you know, after all these things were happening with all the raids and things like that, it kind of became an immigration movie also. And yeah, it does touch on the hard times that the immigrants, you know, have. And how easy it is for people just to tag them as immigrants, and, you know, they actually are real people that struggle and have a hard time.
And I think that one of the things that I was most touched within the film, of course, though, which I believe is the main theme, is the family dynamic and trying to connect with your sons and daughters. And I love the way that you know, Lupe has to finally let herself go and break away from the past, and not only her deceased husband, but, you know, kind of the way she's begins caring with your character and taking care of him and the
right,
like. So,
well, you know, that's basically her role was kind of like my role in real life. You know, I don't, you know, even though I'm married, I have my family. I did leave my family for about, you know, almost a year, just to take care of my dad. It was a 24-hour thing that I was with him. My wife understood. She understands that's part of the family, and my children understood. So, yeah, I mean, it did relate a lot to what Lupe was trying to do, and I said, you know, eventually we all have to move on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened in the movie, and that's what happened in real life.
Describe for me what it was like to attend the Independent Spirit Awards earlier this year.
Well, that was something else. I totally unexpected. Chris called me, told me about the Spirit Awards. I didn't even know what they were. And when he told me how important they were, it took me a couple of days for it to set in. But it was incredible, you know, being able to be around people that you've seen on TV at the movie theaters, and, you know, almost rubbing elbows with them, or actually rubbing elbows with some of them. You know, I had Marissa Tomei sitting next to me. I talked to Javier Bardem. It was awesome. It was a once in a lifetime deal. I hope I can make it again, but you know, I'm lucky I made it already once.
Well, you were nominated on your first time out. Nothing
that's
to
right,
it, you
that's
know.
Right. No, it was something to it. Like I said, Chris and the cast and the crew, they had a lot to do with it. They all, you know, helped in guiding me, because, you know, I was like, I guess you could say I was like a piece of clay. You could mold me any way you want. I didn't know any better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What opportunities has this role and this publicity that surrounds the film opened up for you, if any?
Well, I mean, I've gotten some calls, and I did a small part for Paolo Belis, who's also a director here in San Antonio. And I've gotten some other calls, but I have, when I was in L.A., I ended up with, you know, with a manager, because, you know, she kind of like recognized who I was, and she asked me if I had any managers already. I said no, so she became my manager. So she's looking, but she's kind of like very picky, mm-hmm. and well, we're trying to find something.
Picky is good, I think.
Yes, it is.
what's been your most favorite experience of this whole, which is, seems like it's been, you know, I guess this is going on almost a 3-year process now.
Yeah, 3 years.
So what's been your most favorite aspect?
It's meeting all the different people that I've met along the way, going to different places. I've traveled, you know, because of the job that I had before I started working on my own. I used to work for Gonzaga Medical Group, and we had clinics across the south of the nation. I used to travel to different places, so I got to travel, but meeting different people and you know, I'm not used to getting praise for anything, but it's a different feeling.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pedro Castaneda, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.
I also spoke to the director of August Evening, Chris Eska. Eska is from Autine, Texas, a small town. Eska is originally from Autine, Texas, a small town near Palmetto State Park in Gonzales County. After graduating valedictorian of Gonzales High School, Eska went to Rice University for his bachelor's degree, following that with a master's in film directing from UCLA. His master's thesis, a short film called Doki Doki, was broadcast nationally on PBS Independent Lens. August Evening is his first feature film. Chris Eska, when did you first begin to come up with the idea for your film, August Evening?
It's probably in the early part of 2005. Gone to Sundance, not with a film, but just with a couple of friends, and been watching a lot of films there, and we just weren't connecting with them emotionally. And so my friends sort of convinced me that we should finally make our first feature. I'd been out of film school about a year and a half at that point. And so I went back to Texas, and I just started writing, and we went right into it. So we're in pre-production by the spring and shooting that summer.
Tell me about how you came to cast Pedro Castaneda in the lead role of this film.
I was actually at an art space called Urban 15 in San Antonio, and Pedro was installing wireless computer networks. And we were just waiting in the lobby, and he had on this great pair of boots, so I walked right up to him and said, "You have a great look. Have you ever been interested in film acting?" And of course, he had not. But I sent him home with the script, and he read it over with his family and decided that it talked about emotions and things that were important to him. And so he sort of decided to drop out of society for a couple of months there and come down to our little filmmaking commune in South Texas.
The film includes a mix of both actors and non-actors. And how do you direct a non-actor as opposed to working with somebody who has training?
I take a very physical approach. I'm very, very specific when I work with non-actors. I want them to memorize everything that they have to do in terms of the blocking or the action of the scene. So I will tell them, say the first half of this line and then pause, look up and to your right, and then say the rest of your line. Or when the other actor gets to this point, stop chewing and look up to them and then deliver your next line. So at first it seems almost dry and robotic, but for non-actors, it's good for them to completely memorize everything they have to do. And then once everything is in line, then they can start to relax and they can start to draw on their own past experiences. And that brings out the true emotions. It really makes it a complete performance.
The use of untrained actors in your film, of course, brings to mind 1950s era neorealism. But who are the directors that you looked toward for inspiration in your filmmaking?
A lot of my heroes are from 1950s world cinema. Ozu from Japan, but also Satyajit Ray from India. I'm also a fan of modern filmmakers like Terrence Malick and the Dardenne brothers, who are from Belgium.
And this film deals with parent-child relationships, as you alluded to a moment ago, and letting go of the past for some characters, or just trying to break away from the past in some ways. Did you look to your own family or extended family or friends for inspiration or stories of others that you knew?
This story is definitely influenced by events in my own family's history, but also from friends of mine growing up in Gonzales, Texas, which is a majority Latino farming community. So I knew a lot of families similar to this one when I was a child. But also, I rely on stories of friends and their families from places like Japan or India. And the idea, it may be a little naive, but the idea is that I'm trying to talk about universal human emotions so that people in Germany can watch this Latino family and say that they see their family reflected in that story.
Yeah, I noticed that myself, especially in the nature of communication between the father and the children, and specifically adult children in this case, and communication or even a lack of communication in some ways.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think a lot of films have in the past maybe dealt with the father being disappointed in the son. Maybe he doesn't want to follow in the footsteps or take on the family business or something. But what is also interesting and what I find to be true in real life is that grown children are also often disappointed in their grown parents. And so that's sort of an interesting twist to put on it and to show that both the mutual love and the mutual disappointments go both ways.
You don't speak Japanese. In your first film as a director, Doki Doki was in Japanese. And although I understand you've been trying to learn Japanese, is that true?
I was certainly trying back in the early 2000s.
And you don't really speak Spanish either. What made you decide to shoot August Evening in Spanish?
Well, for Doki Doki, I'd taken time off from UCLA Film School and traveled all around, backpacked around China and India and Southeast Asia. And by the time I went back to UCLA and I had to make my thesis film, by then I realized that I probably had more friends in Tokyo at that point. And it was just more interesting to see the streets and trains of Tokyo than to see the same old Santa Monica Pier or the desert outside of Los Angeles that you always see in student films. And when it came time to make August Evening, I really had enjoyed the process of working in another language. For one thing, I don't think that words and language are what cinema does best. I think that what film does best is expressing emotion through things like music and editing and montage, the subtle glance of an actor or just body language. And so that way I don't have to get caught up in the syntax and I can put my efforts towards what's important about a film.
In some ways, then, when you're editing the movie, when you're really looking at the footage that you have, you're almost really concentrating on how lines are delivered then orally as well as physically. Then you're really truly looking at the performances rather than focusing sometimes on the words, I guess. Is that true?
Sure. And anybody who's ever watched a foreign language film, even if you don't speak, you know, say Chinese, you can always tell if the actor's doing a good job. You can tell if you're emotionally engaged. There's another reason I also wanted to do it in Spanish. It's just because I wanted to tell a story about a slightly more traditional family structure. And so I wanted to set it in the first and second generation immigrant world, because I feel like any family, no matter the background, any family that's been in this country for more than a couple of generations, we tend to spread out. You know, my sister lives in New York. I was living in LA. We'd see our parents maybe once a year if we were lucky. And so when I want to talk about the intergenerational duty, and surrogate families and things of this nature, it made more sense to come home and set it in the immigrant community that's right in my own backyard and the community that I grew up with.
Do you think the film really says something specific about the immigrant experience in America?
It definitely touches on a few specific immigration issues, but I didn't make the film to be political. I really did want any family from any background to identify with the characters in the film. And we've had a lot of success with that. We played the film all over in places like Portugal and playing in Korea, and we played it in, you know, Woodstock, New York. And the audiences really, really do connect with this Latino family, and they see their own family in it.
At the Spirit Awards, you said something about you hope that this film, if it allowed anybody to see immigrants different in any way, you know, and again, going towards that kind of, human aspect that and common shared stories, I guess, that you hope that the film would succeed in doing that.
Right. I feel like a lot of times people make a film about an issue that's dear to their heart. And sometimes it's very straightforward or sometimes overtly political. But I wanted to take a different approach. And so I just wanted to really humanize this family and show that everything they're going through emotionally is exactly the same as what every other family goes through. And so although I'm not out there in the film actively talking about immigration reform, if people watch the film and because they connect with this Latino family and that changes the way they feel about the way we treat immigrants in this country, then that would certainly make me very happy.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the film's cinematography. And when I spoke to Pedro Castaneda, I remarked that I had never seen Gonzales and South Texas and San Antonio look so beautiful on film before. There are all these wonderful shots of the landscape and these beautiful sunlit scenes. Can you tell me about the way the film was shot?
Yeah, thank you. I shot the film with my director of photography, Yasu Taneda, who had shot my Japanese film, Doki Doki. And we ended up shooting on the Sony F900, which was the top-of-the-line high-definition camera at the time. It's what George Lucas used for the new Star Wars movies. And I made a specific point to do tons and tons of location scouting. So we were all over San Antonio, all over South Texas, in the country roads near where I grew up. And we sort of relied on a whole network of crew who went out and found these beautiful spots. And on top of that, we would tend to shoot them early in the morning or just right before the sun goes down or right after the sun goes down during magic hour. And that brings out those beautiful tones that you get in Texas, those oranges and sometimes those purples as the sun is going down. And you can't beat South Texas for beauty. If you don't have money, then you just you show up outside in a beautiful vista and there's your production value.
There's also a great nighttime shot. I love the fireworks scene where they're just going off behind the Luis and Lupe's heads, and it's just, I mean, it sparks the character at the same time. It's just beautiful the way that shot.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, there's another example of what you can do at night on high definition, both those fireworks scenes as well as nighttime driving scenes going through the streets of San Antonio. We had motorcycle scenes. And it's the kind of thing you can do without having to bring a bunch of huge cinema lights when you're shooting on 35mm. We just went out there and put the camera in the back of a truck and just shot on the streets with a lot of natural light.
Describe for me what it was like to attend the Independent Spirit Awards earlier this year, and then what it was like to hear August Evening called out as the winner of the Cassavetes Award.
Spirit Awards were a little surreal because we made this film with the idea that it might only ever play in my parents' living room. And then to be there with, you know, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie and to have Pedro Castaneda nominated against Oscar winners, it was amazing. And I really appreciated all the other films that were in my category. So that was sort of doubly exciting to be nominated against all these other films. When they called my name, I wasn't nervous. It was strange. I just went up there, and I finally got to sort of thank the people who had made it all worthwhile, because usually it's just the director and producer's names who get called out, but you can't make these films without the support of your cast and crew and your local communities, in my case. So that was fun, but then as soon as I got the stage, my stomach was in knots, because I realized I just talked to, you know, perhaps a million people.
And so what's been happening since then with the film as it's opening up around the country? Slow rollout, I guess, across America in different cities?
Yes, we're being distributed by a new company called Maya Entertainment Group, headed up by Moctezuma Esparza, a longtime producer in Los Angeles. And we started in Manhattan on September 5th, and we're doing San Antonio on September 19th and coming to Los Angeles on September 26th. And then we're going to Austin and Portland and Minneapolis and hopefully about 10 more cities at least, and we'll see how it goes from there.
And what kind of opportunities has the recognition of this film gotten? What kind of opportunities has it opened up for you, if any?
Well, I mean, I've certainly got interest from people from all different types of production companies and producers who've wanted to see if I've been interested in working with their projects. You know, it's still in the generally low budget, which means under $1 million, which sounds like a lot of money to me, but it's still incredibly difficult to make a film for under $1 million, even though we made this film for under $40,000. But, you know, I really want to generate my own material. And I want to direct something that I write. And sometimes that takes time. And I'm so busy right now with distribution and a million other things that it's okay. I'd rather wait and make the right film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the film was made for under $40,000 with a lot of help from friends and especially the city of Gonzales, Texas as well.
Sure. When you make your first feature, it's definitely helpful to go home. And I went to Gonzales, Texas, where we've lived there for over 30 years. And the community just really rallied behind us. All the meals were donated by local restaurants or cooked by local residents and brought down to the set. And they gave us all the locations, and a lot of extras came out for free. Even the local thrift stores allowed our production designers to go in, take a whole lot of, you know, pieces of furniture and clothing and knickknacks and take them down to the set, use them, and then bring them back and not have to pay for them. So it was just an amazing support.
A lot of filmmakers, of course, are, you know, once the film is released and, you know, even if it's been cut a little bit, because I know August Evening was cut down a little bit since its South by Southwest preview back in 2007, there's still things that you might look at on your film and think, that worked, or this worked really well. What's one of those moments in the film that you really just look at it and you go, gosh, we did that one pretty good that day, that shot?
I've always been really pleased with the carnival scene that you mentioned. It's just, it sums up what I strive to show as my voice as a filmmaker. There's a young couple getting to know each other. We see them sort of enjoying explosions in the sky, you know, fireworks, and going on amusement park rides, and there's really interesting electronic Japanese music in the background. It sounds strange, but it somehow all comes together, and it works in just a very sort of bittersweet, interesting way.
Chris Eska, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Chris Eska is the director of August Evening, showing in San Antonio, Los Angeles, Austin, and Portland over the coming weeks. You'll find an updated list of screenings online at www.augustevening.com. That'll do it for this Cinema Tuesdays podcast. I'm Nathan Cohn. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you at the movies.